Welcome to the Amherst Wesleyan Church Sermon Podcast.
I think all of us have had the experience where we were talking to somebody and they're sharing something that's going on in their life, or they're going on something that's going on in the life of their a family member or something, and it's this crazy illness, it's cancer, it's some complicated marriage issue, something's going on with the kids, something going on with the job, and it's nothing so simple that it's just like, well, man, if I give you $30, then that solves a problem. Or if I can show up and do your dishes for you, that solves a problem, right? It's a complicated situation. And you're left sitting there going, man, there is nothing that I can do to help this person. I can sit and I can listen, but there is nothing I can do to solve this problem. And inevitably, in that conversation, you end up saying something like, oh, I wish I could heal that. I wish I could change that. I wish I could do something to help you. But all I can do is pray for you. You've said that, right? We've been in those situations where things are going on and it feels like the only thing that is available to us is to pray for that person or pray for that situation. You want to be able to go and do something to fix it, but you can't, and so you say, all I can do is pray. Your friend has cancer, your neighbor loses their job, your kid grows up and turns away from God, your bills are getting tighter and tighter, politics are getting more and more hostile, your friend's marriage is in trouble, somebody is struggling with anxiety and depression, and all we can do is pray for them. And it's a helpless feeling, isn't it? It's a helpless feeling. It feels like I'm not able to actually do anything to make a difference here. And all you're left with is prayer. Why do we say it like that, though? Why do we say it? Why, as we enter into these situations and we hear these problems, we hear about these complicated situations and challenges and illnesses and all this turmoil, we all look at it and for some reason we think that if I can actively, physically manipulate the situation, then I'm doing something valuable. But if I can't do that, then the second rate or last ditch effort, the Hail Mary, as they say in football, which is actually going back to the Catholic tradition, the last ditch effort is to pray for them. When you got no other option, pray, because that might work, maybe. It's not as good as going out and fixing it. Why do we say it like that? Why do we say it like that? In the book of Daniel, as we've been looking at all month so far, we find out that Daniel prayed 3 times a day, even when he was threatened. We find out that in chapter 9, he interceded for the people of Israel when they realized that it was their sin that had caused the exile. Daniel talked to God a lot, actually. In chapter 2, he interprets a dream. In chapter 4, he interprets another dream. In chapter 5, there's an image on a writing on a wall. There's in 7 verse 1, he has a dream. In 8 chapter 1, he has a vision. In 9 verse 20, he talks to the angel Gabriel. In chapter 10 verse 1, he has another vision. Throughout the book of Daniel, we have this record of Daniel talking and listening to God, talking and listening to God, talking and listening to God, talking and listening to God. And in chapter 2, there's a really fascinating situation that goes on. In chapter 2, we find that the king has a dream. This foreign king, Nebuchadnezzar, who is not a God-fearing man, he has this dream, he has this vision, and so he calls all of his wise men, all of his magicians, all of these people that should be able to come up with something smart to say. He calls them all in and says, guys, I had a dream, and I need you guys to tell me what it means. And all the guys are like, yeah, sure. All right, tell us the dream, and we'll explain it to you. And this king goes, no, I want you to tell me my dream. And then tell me what it means. And all the guys in the room are like, yeah, we can't do that. And the king doubles down, and he goes, if you guys are really able to do all of the magician stuff, all the wise men stuff that you say you're able to, you better be able to tell me what I dreamed and then tell me what it means, or I'm going to kill you all. And at this point, all the guys are getting pretty panicked. And it comes down that Daniel is one of those guys that is going to be killed if no one can tell this king his dream and tell him what it means. And in chapter 2, verse 17, this is what it says. It says, then Daniel returned to his house and explained the matter to his friends, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, also known as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And he urged them to plead for mercy from the God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that he and his friends might not be executed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. And during the night, the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision. Then Daniel praised the God of heaven. And the story goes on to reveal that Daniel was able to go to the king, tell him what the dream was, and interpret it. But Daniel's first response there, in one of these first experiences he has with the king, is for him to go home, go to his friends, and say, plead for mercy from the God of heaven concerning this mystery. If he doesn't intervene, we're dead. And then throughout the rest of the book of Daniel, we see him praying 3 times a day. And we see him having dream interpreted, and vision interpreted, and another dream, and a vision, and another vision, and another vision. And we see his life is just saturated in prayer and saturated in God intervening in his life, speaking to him. And I think there was something very, very important that happened in that situation in chapter 2. Something that God taught Daniel in that moment that defined the rest of his life. And it's this. We can't help anyone without God's intervention. Daniel knew that he couldn't save anyone without God's intervention. He didn't go home and go, all right, guys, let's think really hard. What could that dream have been? And what could it have meant? No. He knew the first course of action was prayer. The first response was prayer. Because if God didn't intervene, it didn't matter what he did trying to help. It wasn't going to work. And for us, we so often think, well, prayer is a last resort, but it really needs to be the first resort, the first step, because we can't help anyone without God's intervention. It's like, I don't know if you guys have ever heard this, the kind of scary fact, but apparently it is very, very easy to get disoriented underwater. And it's not uncommon for divers or people who are in car crashes that go into the water to not realize which way is up. And people can end up swimming sideways or they can end up swimming down because they're not aware which way is up. When astronauts are in space, they have a number of instruments to try to help guide them because they look around and they can't see anything to ground them. And when their instruments start to malfunction, it's very easy for them to get lost in the black. Imagine going to a new city or a new country and trying to navigate your way through, and you don't have a map and you don't have a GPS and you're trying to find some place. It's exceptionally difficult. What is the first thing that you end up doing if you don't have a map and you don't have a GPS and you're trying to find a location in a place you've never been before? What do? You ask somebody for directions. Our first response to anything should be asking for directions. We need to be a people whose first reaction is to get God involved. One, so that he can speak to us, and two, so that we can hand the situation over to him and get him acting in it. Because if he doesn't solve it, whatever we do is not actually going to solve it. If we choose to pray first and not last, imagine what God can do with the marriage problems, with the hungry people, with the sick, with the sickness, with the depression, with the anxiety, with politics, with car troubles, with home repairs, with loneliness, with guilt, with fear, with money problems. Imagine what God can do with all of those things if our first response isn't to try to fix it ourselves, but to pay attention to what God is calling us to do in those situations and to get him involved acting miraculously behind the scenes. That's what Daniel knew. He learned it very early on in his career. This situation is impossible, and I desperately need God to work here. And that set the standard for the rest of his life. So much so that when he was threatened with death, with being thrown into a lion's den, if he decided to pray to his God, he still chose to pray to God 3 times a day. Because he knew that if God didn't intervene, he was dead anyways. I know it's a habit. I know it's a habit that we carry of this, oh, I can't do that, but I can pray for you. I know saying it that way is a habit. But I think we need to really break that habit. I think we really need to become a people who understand, who desperately need God to intervene, even in the situations that we think we can handle on our own. It doesn't need to be a big, dramatic, all right, let's stop everything. I know somebody lost $20, and I don't want to go looking for it. let's just gather everyone and pray. It doesn't need to be a big production. But it might be, okay, you lost something? All right. Lord, help us to find that and get to work. But you hand it over to him. Let prayer be the first response. And you develop that by developing a stronger, holier relationship with God. It means you've got to get closer to him. It means that those things that are between you and him, you've got to get rid of. If there's sin in your life, you've got to get rid of it. And you don't need to get rid of it just by trying harder. He wants to help you get rid of it. Jesus came so you could get rid of it. It's by the power of Christ that you get rid of it. And so you don't need to get rid of it on your own. He's there. He's like, I want to be closer to you, and I can help get rid of that sin that's in your life, that's in the way. Let him help you get rid of that sin. Get rid of that stuff that's in the way between you and him. Get closer to him. And then when problems come up, stop. Just for 10 seconds, stop. Ask God. Ask him to intervene. And then follow his leading. Let that be your first response. Daniel did the incredible, miraculous things he did, not because Daniel was great, but because he pursued God first. And he understood that we can't help anyone without God's intervention. The worship team's going to come back up. We're going to spend some more time worship in song. And this is a fantastic moment for us to process and to respond to this reality. There are things going on in your lives, and there are things going on in the lives of those around you that are far beyond your capability, and there are things going on that you think you can handle on your own. Let your first response be, seek the will of God and seek his intervention in that situation. Spend time during these next songs bringing them to him. We're doing this prayer event next Saturday. Ask God when it is you should be signing up for that. Where it is, what time you should be signing up to be praying during that. Be part of that. Maybe you need to spend time confessing to him and saying, God, I'm sorry for trying to fix all these things on my own. And you just need to surrender it to him, whatever it is. This is a fantastic time to re-engage in prayer with God. Because we can't help anyone, including ourselves, unless God intervenes.
Thanks for listening and being part of our church and joining us in this journey to become down-to-earth people following Jesus in down-to-earth ways.